You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism. Broadcasting live from Florida's Suncoast on WTMY Sunday Travel Radio. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's our host, the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
Thank you, Greg.
This is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel on WTMY 1280 out of Florida's Suncoast in Sarasota and on TTRN.com. We have a great show today, as usual, on the all-new Sunday Travel Radio, and our guests today will be Neil Schwartzberg and Suzanne Wright.
Hi, Roy.
Hiya, Neela. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing terrific, and it's been a while since we've spoken to you. And I've been looking at your website, which is Offbeat. I'm looking at Offbeat Las Vegas, but it's offbeattravel.com, and it looks like you've been doing a bit of traveling since we last spoke.
Yes, I have. I've been trying to do it as much as possible, and going across the world and also seeing sites closer to home.
Well, now, for those who have listened to our show before, you'll all know that Neela is a transplant from New York, as many of us are, and now living in New Mexico. Is that where you are?
Yes, I moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, in the land of enchantment.
Oh, how enchanting indeed.
It is. It is. You know, people say to me, oh, New Mexico, I love Santa Fe. And I go, wait a minute, Albuquerque. Albuquerque. It's a great city. I recommend it to everyone.
That's great. That's super. I'm glad you've settled in. Now, you've recently been to Las Vegas, and you've done an article, and it's posted on your blog along with a YouTube video. I didn't know you were a rapper. When I played back the video and I'm listening to this rap music, I'm saying, is this, well, what sounds like rap to me, you know what I mean? But I said, is this the real Neela? I know I'm listening to some music here that I'm not sure of, and but it certainly was interesting.
I selected it.
Ah, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, what you did is, what you call Offbeat Las Vegas, is that you did the downtown area, the Fremont Street, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us about it. I haven't been there in a long time. I lived in Vegas for almost 2 years at one stage of my life. However, I haven't really seen the new Las Vegas. And tell us what's happening in Offbeat Fremont Street.
Well, Fremont Street was the original Las Vegas before the Strip. And as you know, after the Strip got popular, Fremont Street kind of spiraled downward. But they've been putting a lot of time, effort, and money into restoring it, and it is a great spot now. It's got some of the old casinos. It's got the Golden Nugget. It's got Binion's. So the classics are there. They opened a 250,000 square foot shopping, dining, and entertainment complex called the Neonopolis. And as you can imagine, it's got a lot of neon. And it also has some of the old original neon signs from old Las Vegas that have been restored and installed there by the Neon Museum, which I'll be happy to talk about too. But one of the cool things about Fremont Street is that, excuse me, my allergies are acting up.
Does that go with the territory?
Pardon?
Does that go with the territory of New
Mexico? Well, I had it in New York, and it came as a surprise. I have it here in New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Thought I was going to escape.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So what they do, they have a covered area of Fremont Street, and at first look, it seemed as if it was to keep the sun out of, baking the people so people wouldn't get too hot. But it's covered with, I don't know how many thousands of tiny little LEDs. And they do light shows with music. And we were there and we heard the tribute to Queen and Don McLean's American Pie. And they have all the light show going and the music is blasting out of the speakers. And it's really It's transfixing. You know, we all just like stopped in our tracks and stared at the ceiling.
Well, you know, I always liked downtown. Funny enough, I mean, the Strip was always great, but there was just a different feeling about the downtown area, and of course, that's where some of the people who have built the bigger hotels had their start, actually.
Yeah, and there's a number of big hotels that are still there, and it's very popular. You know, we were there during the week, and there were plenty of tourists there coming in on buses, and locals were showing up because they like it. It feels more, I guess, like home to them.
Well,
it is a homier feel. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have quite the over-the-top, oh my gosh,
right,
feel of the Strip.
Right, exactly, and
it,
a bit more laid back.
There.
Yeah. So what about what about the pricing and food? And you mentioned, I'm looking at your blog at the moment, and you mentioned on your blog that the food prices were pretty good.
Well, I was surprised by how expensive the food was in Las Vegas. You can get a reasonably priced hotel room, but there's really very little about the food that's cheap in the hotels. Those long gone, well, they are long gone, the inexpensive buffets.
Yeah, the 99-cent buffets.
Say bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
But on Fremont Street, you can still find some inexpensive buffets. I think one of them is $7.77, and another one is $6.99. And they have inexpensive drinks. And it's just a more relaxed feel.
Where did you stay? Give us some idea of hotel pricing.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you. I'm looking at your blog here, and you said that somewhere here, I even checked out of my hotel when I got an email offering me stays starting at $35 a night. It's not a fabulous place, but it's on the Strip, and $35 a night, I don't think I can run my house for that amount.
That's the Imperial Palace.
We
stayed in the Imperial Palace, and as my blog said, I hadn't even checked out yet when they were offering me reduced price stays, and they're not the only ones. I have gotten emails from the Rio and I think Harrah's. The hotels are offering deals now because I'm told Las Vegas is hurting. I thought it was crowded as ever, but, you know, I haven't been there that many times. So it is a good time to go in terms of getting a good hotel at a good price.
Right. Now, did you actually stay down on Fremont Street, or did you actually stay on the Strip? Because you mentioned that you just stayed at the Imperial Palace, I believe you said.
We stayed at the Imperial Palace because we got a very good deal.
Right.
You know, it's a hotel. It's a place to stay. It's not glitzy or anything, and it's not particularly luxurious. But it was convenient. It's right on the Strip. And we used that as a base and then went off in different places and directions, including a day and an evening at Fremont Street. We came back twice.
Okay. Now, you say that, of course, the shows are extraordinarily expensive now, but you found a way to find some discounted tickets. Tell us about that.
Yes, I had actually wanted to go see the Blue Man Group, but the price was perilously close to $100 a ticket, and there's almost nothing that I want to do for $100 a pop that doesn't involve getting on a plane and flying someplace exotic. So we were looking in the magazines that they give you in the hotel, and there was a half-price ticket place not far down the road. So we walked down, and we got on the line, and it isn't really half-price. Some of the shows are, but most of them aren't. And they didn't offer a half-price ticket on the Blue Man Group, so we didn't do that. But we did get a good price, not half price, but a good price, on a show that was in the Imperial Palace called Legends. And that was a lot of fun. That was a tribute show that changes. And the night we were there, I think they had four or five performers. The Jay Leno impersonator hosted, and he was funny. He was really good. And they, of course, ended with the Elvis impersonator, who was excellent. And there was, I think, Donna Summers and Justin Timberlake and Madonna. And one other that'll come to me, Tom Jones. And they were all excellent. And it was just a lot of fun.
And interesting that it should, the show was at the Imperial Palace where you were staying.
Well, that was part of the reason we decided to get the tickets for it, because we'd have to go to the box office to get the seats in advance. So we got a voucher from the half-price ticket place, and then we have to go to the theater to get the actual tickets with a seat. So it was just very convenient.
So, in other words, these discounted tickets, not necessarily half, but certainly discounted, what they obviously do is that at last minute, the shows that aren't sold out, they discount the price, to a reasonable amount, but you don't necessarily have a choice. Well, you have some choices, but the choice is what's available on that particular night.
Absolutely.
But nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that at all. If you're gonna get a $100 ticket for $60, that works. And they threw in a drink as well, right?
Yeah, it was, and it was just a lot of fun. And frankly, I prefer to see what's available that day, because I don't know what I'm gonna do. I don't know what I'm gonna want to do. So this worked out very well for us.
Now, the days of the lounge shows seem to have disappeared, from my understanding, but you do say that there are some free shows.
What they've done, from what I can tell, is they've moved some of their special effects, let's say, outside. And the Dancing Waters of the Bellagio will always be one of my favorites. I happen to love those. They are the fountains that erupt and swirl in time to the music. And they have them on a regular schedule, and people just kind of line up along the edge and watch and enjoy. There's a pirate show at one of the hotels. I can't remember the name. And they have a fight between two pirate vessels, and one of them sinks. And there's going to be a new volcano show coming to replace the one that just closed down. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on that's free and that's actually outside.
And the living statues you mentioned.
Oh, that's inside. Those are fun. Yeah, they have statues that are animated, and they tell a story. I think that's in Caesar's. There's statues that are people that act and, you know, periodically change, and you go, wait, was that real or a statue? So there's a lot of fun stuff that is free, you don't have to pay for, and it's kind of neat to discover it as you wander around.
So,
but I do want to talk briefly about the Neon Museum.
Well, you don't have to talk briefly, we have plenty of time.
Oh, okay. The Neon Museum is very cool. It's not really a museum. It's a collection of old neon signs, and part of the charm of Fremont Street is that the Neon Museum has installed some of their refurbished signs scattered about Fremont Street. So there's a big cowboy, and there's a duck, and there's a neon milk carrier, and all kinds of things that they have rescued over the years. And they give tours of what they call the boneyard, which is the area in which they're storing all the old signs as they await money to refurbish them. And it's an interesting history, because the museum started about 10 years ago, helped with the support of YESCO, which is a sign-making company, the Young Electric Sign Company by the Young family. And they actually made most of the really creative neon signs in the early days of the Las Vegas Strip. They would make them, starting in 1948, and they would lease them to the hotels, the businesses, and keep them up and repair them as necessary. And what happened is, when these businesses decided they wanted new signs or they closed or whatever, YESCO, which still owned the signs, took them back, because they they represented the creative efforts of the company, and the company wanted to hold on to them, and they got very fond of them. So they began to store them. And then people heard that Yesco was storing all these old cool neon signs and wanted to visit them. And it created a bit of a problem for Yesco because they were in the sign-making business and not the museum business. So they encouraged the Neon Museum to start with the goal of collecting, refurbishing, and exhibiting the classic Las Vegas art form, the neon sign.
How cool is that, huh? That's terrific. Now, and this museum, Neela, is in the Fremont Street area, right?
No, some of their restored signs are in the Fremont Street area. The museum itself is in a slightly different part of town,
uh-huh.
more like the business district.
Okay.
But people can find the Neon Museum online and make arrangements to get a tour of the Boneyard, which, as I said, is a place where they are storing all these signs. And the money that the Neon Museum makes goes towards the refurbishing of the signs. And they're opening their new visitor center. It looked to me like they were getting ready to open it pretty soon. They expect either in late 2009 or early 2010. Sometime in 2009.
Okay.
Yeah. The dates get away from me sometimes.
Yeah, I can identify with that.
But the visitor center is going to be this beautiful white swooping building that they rescued from the destruction of the wrecking ball. It was the La Concha Motel lobby.
Oh, very good. You did dine around a bit. Can you tell us just a bit about where you found what you liked? I mean, you did say there's still some buffets.
We got a good deal on the buffet in the Imperial Palace, so
right.
we ate there.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it was a fantastic bargain, but it wasn't as expensive as other buffets. I think it was $25 a piece. But there is in Las Vegas one of the country's best Thai restaurants called Lotus of Siam. And I heard about this from a friend of mine, Dave Feldman, who adores it. In fact, he makes trips to Las Vegas, I think, just to eat there.
Just to get Thai food?
So we ate there, and my God, the food is fantastic. It was just wonderful. And you may want to make reservations for, because although it's in a little strip shopping center, it has become mecca for Thai food lovers.
Well, that sounds great. It seems like a long way to go just to have some Thai food.
Oh, it's good. I wouldn't go to Las Vegas just for Lotus of Siam, but if I am in Las Vegas, I'll certainly make the trip.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I'd... I think I'd find a lotus flower somewhere local.
Well, some places have, you know, a better selection of ethnic cuisines of different kinds than others. And Las Vegas, I don't know. They certainly have one excellent Thai restaurant.
Now, you went to Vegas, and...
we actually drove.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's where I was headed here. So and then you drove. Where did you go from there? Because I noticed that there was something kind of interesting. You drove from Vegas to where?
Well, the trip from Albuquerque to Las Vegas. Well, first of all, Ed is my significant other and my partner, photographer. Ed and I love road trips. So if we can get to a place in 12 hours, we'll drive there. We won't take a plane. So we packed up the car, we got the cooler, and we headed out. And each time, we've gone to Las Vegas twice, and each time we like to stop and see something different. Ed has made the trip so many times, it's really, what do I feel like seeing this time?
Right.
So the first trip out there, I explored Hoover Dam. But this trip, we went by the Painted Desert and the Petrified Forest. And this is a place I had heard about since I was a kid. But I had no idea really where it was, what it was, or the fact that the Petrified Forest and the Painted Desert are pretty much the same place.
Yeah.
So we decided to stop, and you pay a $10 admission for the car, and we went through and discovered that the ticket is actually good for a week. So we saw the Petrified Forest and the Painted Desert on the way to Las Vegas, And then we went through it on the way back. And it's maybe a 25, 30-mile drive through some incredible scenery. And it has scenic overlooks. And there's an inn where you can have lunch or dinner, I guess. There's hiking trails. There's visitor center that tells you about it. And it's really, it's a beautiful place. It's very, very stark. But the beauty is in the strata of the rock, because it was at one time a lush, it's hard to believe, but at one time it was a lush area, and the petrified forest is the trees that have, as a result of volcanic activity of some kind, turned to stone. They've fallen down, and a lot of the trunks, the tree trunks and limbs have been removed over the years, although now it is a federal offense to take anything out of the area. But you can still see pieces of tree trunk, and you go and you look at them, and they look like gorgeous minerals, you know, kind of glowy in different colors, and they are stone, rock hard stone, but it still has the texture of a tree.
It's interesting that you should bring that up, because when I was living in Vegas, one day, I guess on a Saturday or Sunday, I decided to drive out into the desert and look around. Now, you know, coming from New York as you do, I was, you know, I didn't know what to expect. So, you know, desert to me was like the Sahara Desert, and I thought I was going to see all sand. So, anyway, when I got out there, I was wandering around, and they weren't really. There was one other person, I think, and it was an older lady, and she walked over to me and she said, "You look disappointed." And it's kind of interesting, because I didn't really think that would show so much on my face. And she said, "You must come from a green area."
Ooh.
And I said, "I do." And so she said, "Well, you know, there's beauty in the green, but there's also great beauty in the brown. You just have to make the adjustment and look for it."
Yes.
And so then I had a whole different perspective on what I was looking at. And then I could see some of the images that you've just mentioned. And I thought, you know, she's absolutely right. There is great beauty here, and now I see it. But it took a little bit of that awakening to bring it out. Then my appreciation for those areas began to grow, and then I looked a little deeper, and as you say, the formations and that were really quite amazing.
It's true. When I first moved out here, I did have to adjust. And I have to tell you, Roy, I have never seen so many shades of brown. Once I started looking, there's vibrant yellow browns and beiges that glow in the sun. And I can see the rock formation of the mountains. I live in the foothills of the Sandias, and I can see the rock formations, and it's gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. And sometimes when I've gone to more green areas, it actually bothers me. I look at the mountains, and I can't see them. All I see are these fuzzy green things all over the place, and I think, too many trees.
Yeah, well, you know, and you're quite right about the lighting. When the sun hits it, the reds and all those hues come out, and as the sun moves across it and the shade begins to come on, it keeps changing.
It is extraordinary, and then it has the gorgeous, vibrant blue sky. Yeah, I love it. It is beautiful.
And so, and of course, there's a great, gorgeous lake out there as well. The dam was great, and I loved the dam. It was interesting to watch. And
it is an amazing feat of engineering, and the road that leads up to it. Talk about the beauty of the desert. It's also stark, but I find it transfixing. It's got rolling mounds of rock and some scrub brush growing, and it's probably one of my favorite patches of road, the road that leads up to Hoover Dam on the trip. Yeah. It's actually a very interesting trip, just in terms of the different geography. Start off in the desert, well, start off in the dry areas of Albuquerque, go through Red Rock Country, where the land and the mountains are red, go up towards Flagstaff. Suddenly you're in Ponderosa Pine Forest, and everything is mountains and forests, and then you go back down into the desert, and you go through part of the Mojave Desert, I think. So there's, like, nothing there. And then you start coming into the Hoover Dam area and Lake Mead, and suddenly there's this huge lake in the middle of the desert, although it doesn't have as much water as it used to. And then you go into Las Vegas, and it's just mind-blowing how you go from, 12 hours with our stops along the way, through so many different scenes.
Well, it sounded like it was a really interesting interesting journey. And the thing I also found as you go through some of these areas in Nevada along the road, there's some other interesting little places with casinos and I don't want to call them restaurants, but some interesting
roadside places.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if you got a chance to stop at any of them, but there's certainly some real interesting ones.
Definitely. We actually went through the town of Holbrook, Arizona. And part of the trip on Route 40 actually parallels or replaces in some parts the old Route 66.
Right.
And so we went through the town of Holbrook to see what happened to it since it was once one of the Route 66 towns. And it's kind of like one of those. It's a quirky, odd little town. It's got the Wigwam Motel. You know those? They were really popular.
I remember them. Yeah, they look like a teepee.
They're hotel rooms that are built like large teepees.
Right.
And they're concrete.
Right.
So you can still stay in them in Holbrook, Arizona.
Well, Neela, it sounds like a great trip, and I thank you for sharing that with our audience. And we look forward to chatting with you again soon on another off-beat adventure.
Oh, I would love to, Roy. It's always good to talk to you.
And same here. Neela Schwartzberg. And Neela is a freelance writer specializing in travel-related stories and publisher of the Offbeat Travel series and website. She is a member of the North American Travel Journalists Association and World Federation of Journalists and Travel Writers. How's your website, Neela? It's
offbeattravel.com.
You got it.
And send me an email and say hi.
Okay, Neela. Bye for now.
Okay, take care, Roy.
Hi, this is now Hall of Famer Wade Boggs, and I'd like to talk to you about another exclusive group that I belong to that has changed my life. I'm talking about the thousands of guys who, just like me, have decided to take control of their hair loss and regrow their hair permanently with the pros at Medical Hair Restoration. The best thing about this club is that you see the rewards every day. Having my hair back has made me look and feel younger than I have in years. And that's the ultimate vote of confidence.
If you are balding or thinning, Medical Hair Restoration, the nation's leader in microsurgical hair transplantation, wants to send you a free DVD package explaining just how easy and painless their hair replacement procedure is. Call 800-410-3147. That's 800-410-3147. Take control of your hair loss and get this free information package sent to you with tons of before and after pictures and testimonials. There's no cost or obligation, so call now, 800-410-3147.
Listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy on WTMY Sunday Travel Radio. Our next guest is the Wonder Woman, Suzanne Wright, who we've spoken to recently. And very interesting. It seems like she left her fork in San Francisco. Hi, Suzanne.
Good morning, Roy.
How are you today? Left my fork in San Francisco.
Well, you know, heart, fork, they're all interrelated, but you know I'm driven by culinary travel.
Yeah, I know. When did you decide, you kind of changed, you kind of crossed over there for, because you know, you used to, you know, it was more kind of adventure and that sort of thing, and then you got into this foodie thing. Was it just that you were hungry one day? Or?
Adventure, Roy.
Yeah, and of course, when you get hungry, yeah, you might as well report on it, I guess.
Yeah, it's, I think I have an equal appreciation for the adventure part, but I do think food is an absolute gateway into understanding a culture or a city or a region. So.
Well, it you sure did pick a great area for eating, that's for sure.
Well, that's part of the challenge that I talk about in the article. I mean, how does one plan to eat in San Francisco? And even if you eat five meals a day, you're still leaving a lot on the table, so to speak.
Yeah, you're not saying now you eat five meals a day, are you?
Well, I'm saying when, you know, I'm serving as girl reporter, absolutely.
Ah, there you go. Anyway, kind of walk us through it. It's really kind of interesting, and there's a. I'll have some questions down the road a little bit, down the line here a little bit, because there's some areas that one in particular that you went to that I wasn't familiar with. But take us on a journey.
Sure. Well, I'm fortunate that I have a friend who is has been living in San Francisco for a number of years, so that eased my culinary anxiety a bit as I was doing my pre-trip research. But, you know, my goal was really to hit a lot of different neighborhoods as opposed to focusing on either one neighborhood in San Francisco or focusing on one type of cuisine, which is certainly another way that you could go if you wanted to eat your way around the city. But I really wanted to, it's been about 5 years since I've been in San Francisco, and I wanted to eat both high and low in terms of budget. I
You're
wanted
right.
to do a mix of sort of neighborhood ethnic restaurants as well as some you know, very highly reviewed restaurants that have national acclaim. So I really wanted to have that mix, and I think that was a good strategy, at least for, you know, at least for me.
Absolutely.
It
gives you a better feeling.
I started dinner in the Marina neighborhood, which is a really trendy, well-established neighborhood that abuts the water, and it's an area packed. It's very New York-like. I mean, San Francisco, of course, you know, is a very densely packed, compact city, very walkable. And the Marina neighborhood in particular is really great. September, which is when I was in San Francisco, so just a couple of weeks ago, is a terrific time to be there. The weather is stellar. And we went to a restaurant called A16, which reminded me very much of being in New York, actually. But what was great is it's a very specific type of Italian restaurant. It's not just like I would have here, maybe in Atlanta, a Red Sauce Italian restaurant or Southern Italian restaurant, but it's a very specific area, Campania. So Dutch cuisine is a very a regional type of cuisine. It's a cuisine that you know, you have to go to a big city with a lot of culinary sophistication to find that type of restaurant. And had just a blowout meal there. A simple restaurant, a neighborhood restaurant. In fact, the table next to us was debating Barack and McCain the entire night with great vigor. So that's how I knew I was in San Francisco. But we had wonderful pizzas right out of the wood-burning oven that was in front of us. And we had local. There's such a bounty of foods that are grown in the Bay Area. It's such a rich agricultural area. We had local sardines that came from just down the coast at Point Reyes that were roasted, and all the briny deliciousness came out and served with a little bit of currants and pine nuts. It was just a really great meal, a great opening to the city. And, you know, it's the kind of restaurant that you could stand in line for an hour, or you could do what we did, which is a good tip maybe for listeners. We tried to eat either fashionably, unfashionably early or unfashionably late so that we didn't end up waiting an hour to get into places.
Right, good. Yeah, that was a good strategy.
In this case, we ate very early, weighed at like 5:30, and the place was packed by 6. So just to give you an idea of the popularity.
Yeah. And so you went to the various neighborhoods, which there are a lot of in San Francisco.
Absolutely. One of the really probably under-visited neighborhoods, which has been undergoing a tremendous redevelopment, is the Presidio, which, Roy, you know, has always been a fortified military installation.
Right.
It's no longer a military base now, but it's the Presidio is now a park. It's this oasis of green rolling hills that sits between the Golden. It's within the boundaries of the Golden Gate National Recreational Area, and you have views of the Pacific Ocean and the Bay Bridge. It's really beautiful. When you kind of felt like you've had enough cement and concrete, it's really great to go walk around in the Presidio, which is now sort of spawning some very intelligently planned development, so mixed-use development. And we had a really lovely meal at Preza Vie. And that's interesting. That restaurant billed itself as a global restaurant, and we enjoyed a late lunch there and had a couple of flights of wine, very generous pours. San Francisco is a real foodie city, so if you evince any interest in something, the waiters are really clued in. The waiters and waitresses, the wait staff are really clued in and will top you off or bring a sample of this or that. So people are wired that way. We had a great Korean flank steak. So, yeah, that was a lovely meal in a really beautiful setting.
And you say that it
was the Palace of Fine Arts, which is a gorgeous
place. Right, I was going to mention that. Yeah.
The turn of last century.
What kind of food did you have?
At Preza Vie, that's, as I said, that's global cuisine.
Right.
So they have sort of a scattering of things. At that particular restaurant, again, the farm-to-table movement is very strong. It had its origins in San Francisco.
Right.
Foodies like myself know that Alice Waters, who's the doyen, and people like Julia Child made their homes in the Bay Area.
Right.
So there's always been a real awareness of organic eating and regional eating and eating in season. So we had absolutely beautiful goat cheese salad with a mix of red and golden beets and goat cheese that was made at a farm within, 75 miles of San Francisco. And as a kind of a nod to the very Asian population in San Francisco, which, again, runs the gamut from Chinese to Korean to Thai to Nepalese, we had a Korean-style flank steak, which was sort of thinly sliced and placed over a spicy slaw. It was terrific. And, again, went down real easy with those flights of Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay that we had.
And interestingly enough, you mentioned, iron steak, which, of course, it is. I mean, they call it a number of things. Well, but a lot of people don't realize that particular cut of beef is one of the most flavorful cuts of beef there is. And we tend to think of, other cuts, so whether they're T-bones or filet mignons. But on the other hand, iron steak and flank steak are one of the most flavorful steaks that we have.
Absolutely. Melts in your mouth, extremely buttery, easy to cut with a fork, don't need a knife. Yeah, beautiful. Just beautiful preparation. Very nice restaurant, and evidently has quite a hopping after-work scene. Again, we were there for a late lunch on a balmy, balmy September afternoon. It was glorious.
Now, you mentioned you had dinner at the Palomar.
Oh, yeah. This is certainly one of the highlights in San Francisco. The Palomar Hotel is a real hip, fun, trendy, south of market boutique hotel. They're very well known for the restaurant that literally sits on the fifth floor of their restaurant. And the chef is from France. And the food, though, is very accessible. It's not what I would consider, and I hope that doesn't in any way disrespect Chef Laurent Manrique, but the food is not this high, super high concept, too precious food. It's certainly gorgeously presented. It's certainly refined, but the base of it is sort of a hearty French, and so extremely flavorful, a lot of earthy ingredients, a lot of his modern interpretations of hundred thousand year old recipes, and that restaurant has been in the top 10 in San Francisco on the San Francisco dining scene since its opening. So, you know, that's hard. That's a hard thing to do. I mean, popular restaurants come and go, chefs come and go. This restaurant is a consistent performer, and it's one that my friend Bradley, who accompanied me on all these dining adventures, said that he's eaten at many, many times, and he's in marketing himself. He entertains there quite a lot. So it's interesting. The restaurant's recently refurbished. It has a much quieter sort of interior than it once had when it opened. But they did have something that I haven't seen in a long, long time, which I was really impressed with, called an honor bar, a self-serve honor bar.
That's interesting. We used to call it.
It consisted of a sideboard. It was laid out with a selection of wines, both red and white, and some beer, different kinds of beer. And then the cocktail of the night, which is sort of the house cocktail there, called a Hibiscus Royale. And the honor bar part is that you just, you know, write down what you ate and then or what you, you know, had. And you can drop your money if you have cash on you, or you can, you know, put your name in the table you're sitting at, and, you know, they'll come pick it up.
Yeah, it's a nice approach. We had it
for the evening. So, fantastic. Fantastic idea. And, you know, I was chatting with the general manager, and I said, are you losing any money on this? He said, no, people are really honest. So, that's fantastic.
And you made yourself a little special drink, did you?
Yeah, really. San Francisco has cutting-edge libations. You know, mixologists, which is a fancy word for a creative bartender, are in hot demand and have been for a long time in this market. And I had something that I have not had before, dining out and drinking out, let's say, called a Hibiscus Royale, which felt slightly Asian in its influence. And it was, again, it was on the self-serve bar, very easy to make. And I was instructed, there were constantly staff walking by to you know, help you work your way through the selection of items that were there. And certainly, I don't want to mislead people. If you want to go to the bar and order a drink, you can certainly do that as well. This is just kind of a fun, interactive way to get to mix your own drink or select your own drink. Sort of the Sephora of drinking for ladies out there who know the self-service makeup store that's become so popular. But anyway, so the Hibiscus Royale, you take a champagne flute, so a beautiful elongated glass, and you drop in this very tight and slightly glazed hibiscus flower, and you drop that into the bottom. Of course, it goes, you know, sinks right to the bottom, and it's beautiful color. It's ruby colored, and the flower has been glazed, so lightly glazed, and then you pour a tiny bit of some colored hibiscus syrup. Again, that's a red color, and that's something that they've made in-house and extracted from the flowers. And then you top that off with a champagne, a rosé champagne, and the net effect is this beautiful, fizzy drink that's not too sweet, that's dry, and, you know, makes you feel very festive, and is a good beginning to your dinner that you'll be ordering at the restaurant. So it's a really, really great drink.
I can see why you switched over to be a foodie.
Sorry, Roy?
I say I can see why you decided to switch over to be a foodie. Now, that wasn't the end of it. Then it was followed by another cocktail.
Well, you know, you've got to do your job for the listeners, right? You have to try several things. So
of course.
I couldn't resist the fact that there was a gin that was made literally within the same neighborhood. We're in the South of Market neighborhood when we're dining at Fifth Floor, which is home to the some of the museums and the Yerba Buena Garden, so it's a very sophisticated neighborhood. And I just thought it was fascinating to learn that there is a gin that's made in the hood by the folks that make Anchor Steam beer, and it's called Junipero. And that one I let the bartender make for me. That was not on the self-serve, but was inspired by the Lonsdale Hotel in London.
Right.
And that was just this real simple drink, fantastic boutique gin mixed with muddled basil. And
yeah, I found that interesting as well.
Delicious. Again, very refreshing. San Francisco in September is a warm month. It's warmer than August. So, you know, temperatures were high. It was a warm day and a balmy evening. So it was a very refreshing Indian summer type drink.
Now, tell us about the food.
Oh, the food. Well, we did what of course, again, listeners who are food fanatics know to do this. You know, certainly ask your servers, and most especially at the better restaurants, or let's say the pricier restaurants, where wait staff is very well versed in their own menus and do a lot of tasting of their own menus. Certainly, you know, you can surrender yourself to the waitress. You can ask for recommendations, and you will not get an answer like everything is good. You will certainly get opinions about what they think are either the chef's best executions or what they feel that they enjoy eating. And a really smart waiter or waitress will certainly inquire, is there something you want to eat? I personally said that I wanted to eat sweetbread. So that made it easy for her. There was one particular dish that I'll talk about that she brought out that had sweetbreads. And I let her select the appetizer or the starter for me. And she brought out frog's legs, which, again, frog's legs, not super common on a lot of menus.
Right,
kind of
right.
Gone out of style a bit.
Exactly.
It was very interesting execution of, a classic dish. Nice because the bones had already been removed, so I'm not doing battle with a tiny little
image of a small leg, yeah.
And it was prepared with corn polenta and artichokes. So, you know, unexpected. You've got some influences there from, you know, that are sort of reaching beyond the borders of France. So that was a terrific dish. And, you know, I don't know. Do frogs like taste like chicken? Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. These didn't. These tasted like delicious frog's legs. Bradley had a great dish. He had a chicken breast and thigh, but what had been done is, the chicken breast and thigh had not been served in their original form. They had been pounded flat, as though with a mallet.
Kind of a scallopini type.
Kind of made into a square, two beautiful squares, and they were incredibly moist. I mean, so often chicken breasts, I think we've all eaten horribly overcooked, dry, tasteless, quote-unquote rubber chicken. This was the antithesis of that. So very moist, and again, interesting preparation. Caramelized cantaloupe and butter poached lobster sitting atop these beautiful, very artistic, elegant squares of chicken. So gorgeous dish. And then my dish was wonderful again. Roasted loin of veal. And again, I said I wanted sweetbreads. It came with a sweetbread fricassee. So that was fantastic. And I love the presentation. They basically poured this thyme-infused carrot puree out of a very small carafe into the bowl. And out plopped some gorgeous whole wheat macaroni. So that was a little bit witty. and unexpected. And it was almost like a stew. It was a delicious stew. So great, great, great meal. We had a fantastic time there. And Friday night it was very busy. And for dessert, of course, I would never miss dessert. The orange-infused olive cake, which may sound odd, but again, the moisture that's carried by olive oil into a cake that could be sort of grainy otherwise was really welcome. And absolute knockout and inspired sherbet that was made with sheep's milk. So tangy, a tangy kind of a accompaniment there. So it was nice. It was a blend of a warm cake and a cool, soothing sort of ice cream light. So, yeah, that was a great meal.
I don't know why we always do this around lunchtime, but
then
you went over to North Beach.
I did go to North Beach. There's a tour that I had wanted to do for a few years now, which is really good fun, called Local Taste of the City. And the owner of that tour operation specializes in just a couple of neighborhoods. So North Beach, which is known as the Italian neighborhood, and Chinatown, which are actually right next door to each other. And it's about a three-hour tour, and you go by foot. We actually met at a cigar store, which I loved. I mean, how fun is that, that you meet at 10 in the morning at a cigar store? And then from there, you go to watch someone roasting coffee. And, you know, you meet the owner of that coffee shop, and we went to a place that a small chocolatier that was making truffles, which I found very interesting. He had 31 flavors, including soy and vegan truffles. Again, that's how you know you're in San Francisco, very specific kinds of food interests and requirements. And then a wonderful, wonderful place called the Liguria Bakery, which specializes in making only focaccia. That's all they make, and I love it. Their sign is, you wouldn't even know that this was a business that was open to the public. It's just barely etched on glass, and the hours say 8 to 1 or 8 to 2, but Tom, the owner and the guide of the tour, said they're never open till 2 because they close when they sell out of bread, which makes sense, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
They close usually between noon and 1 because they're sold out by then. And they have, I don't know, 8 flavors of feather light focaccia. I really like the mushroom focaccia, which I thought was just stupendous. And, you know, there's a certain charm about the fact that it's, you know, little old Italian ladies wrapping it in waxed white paper and, you know, putting it on the counter and taking your $4, I think, enough focaccia to last you the rest of the day. So tremendous bargain. And then we had salami, you know, house-made salami at a place called La Spiaggia. So that was just a great tour. And during the time that you're touring and you're nibbling and you're talking with the shopkeepers, Tom is also pointing out, you know, all the historical things that have happened in the neighborhood. Certainly a neighborhood that has been home to beatnik, quote-unquote, and bohemians. And you finish the tour in a place called the Purple Onion, which is a performance space that has seen the likes of Whoopi Goldberg and Robin Williams and a lot of performers that are very well known to us today. So really, really great way to sort of be out on the street and feel the pulse of a neighborhood and the heritage. Again, you know, it's an Italian neighborhood, quote unquote, but, you know, you've got a Frenchman making chocolates, and, you know, you're right next door to Chinatown, which puts you in a good position to go see the Fortune Cookie Factory, you know, as well. So.
And a little shrimp dumpling every now and then. Huh?
That's right. Well, you know, speaking of all things Chinese, after parading my way through 3 hours of nibbling and tasting and noshing, it was time for a proper meal. And,
right.
Yang Xing, another restaurant that has been at the top of the Zagat ratings in San Francisco for many, many years. is Yangtze restaurant, and they have a couple of locations. We went to the one at Rincon Center, and listeners who know about dim sum, which is the wonderful sort of Chinese brunch, if you will, where tiny little dumplings and other small portions are sort of brought out on a rolling cart, and you just point at what looks good to you, and the servers then put a sampling on your table, and pretty soon your table is filled up with all these little plates, and it's wonderful. So, yeah, we had a lot of great things.
Suzanne, we have about a minute.
We had wonderful shrimp dumplings. We had wonderful salads. I mean, wonderful, wonderful salads made with cabbage and with jicama and with snap peas and things like that. And very, very inventive things like, you know, a scallop that had been shaped into a bird's nest that was made of taro, which is a root. So, yeah, really, really interesting. And
now,
it's a very relaxing way to eat, you know, and you don't have to think much. You can just respond very intuitively to what looks good to you.
Suzanne, we have about a minute left, and you did go to Nepal, and it's an area that I think a lot of people, including myself, aren't very familiar with. In fact, as you say in your article, it's really not known for its food scene in the bakery in the Mission District. If you could just touch on that real quick.
The momos, you mean, that I have?
Metro
Kathmandu is a neighborhood restaurant.
Yeah, the momos, yeah.
And Nepalese food, no, is not one of the world. Nepal is not one of the world's great cuisines, that's for sure. But momos are really specific food again, and
right.
It's not often I get to eat in a Nepalese restaurant when I'm not in Nepal. So momos are Nepal's version of dumplings, and these particular ones were stuffed with ground buffalo, so they were fantastic and had a lot of other delicious spices, curry and ginger and onion and garlic, and, you know, just again, another fun, rollicking place. We could, you know, enjoy red wine there while we're having our dumplings. So that was great, and I do want to put a big shout out to two other places in our remaining seconds here. Shalimar was perhaps my favorite meal of the entire journey, and Indian Pakistani restaurant, again, a couple of locations. We went to the location in the Tenderloin, which is kind of dicey to a lot of people, but the food is well worth any discomfort you might experience in getting through the neighborhood. But fantastic. You can read more about that. I'll have that article up on www.wanderwomanonline.com in the next couple of days. And the Ferry Building Marketplace, if you like food, go on Saturday, go to the Farmer's Market. There are 40 shops and restaurants that will keep you occupied and keep your stomach from growling all day.
Suzanne, a wonderful, wonderful article, and thank you for sharing that with our audience. Suzanne Wright, Wonder Woman, and she just gave you the website. Go to it, and as she said, this will be up, and it will be up on TTRN.com. And for all you savvy travelers out there listening, you may want to tune in on Sundays from 3 p.m. till 9 for WTMY's all-new Sunday Travel Radio. From 3 to 5, Pierre Wolf will host America's Travel and Dining Guide. Then from 5 to 6, yours truly, Roy Lowy, will host Talking Travel. Then 6 to 9, Travel with Stephanie Abrams. We'll offer you a six-hour mix of everything that relates to travel, from travel journalists reporting from around the world, what's hot, what's not, single travel, single parents with kids, the best online travel sites. Our consumer advocates will even be on the job to resolve issues that you may have, and we'll cover it right here on WTMY. So if you want the latest travel info, we'll be here from 3 to 9 on Sundays, and hope you will join us right here on WTMY 1280. You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy, and I'm your travel guide.